Look, whether or not Anton is indeed a midget or a dwarf...
No, he's a midget.
What's the difference?
Well, a dwarf is someone who has disproportionately short arms and legs.
Oh, I know the ones.
Yeah, it's caused by a hormone deficiency.
Yeah, bloody hormones. Yeah. Mm.
A midget is still a dwarf, but their arms and legs are in proportion.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
So, what's an elf?
Do you want to answer that?
An elf is a supernatural being. Sometimes they're invisible, they're like fairies.
They don't actually exist, do they? In real life.
I know you wrote the book because you dedicated it to me. You did the thing for me, and I really appreciate it. And now I'm an asshole because I don't remember the title, but it's...
Monster Files.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you. based on this idea of, like, you know, FOIA and file type searches on these things. Somebody in the chat room mentioned this, and we may have talked about this on the past, but I want to pursue it again tonight. It's like, have you ever considered the possibility, and this is like the craziest conspiracy theory, but I've heard it in a bunch of different places too, just that the government knows, what Bigfoot is, and they're not going to tell us. And I asked in the chat room why, and the person said, fuck you, that's why. which is what you expect in the discourse of a paranormal show. Because I don't know why the fuck the government would want to keep this covered up. But, like, have you thought about it? And I'm sure you've heard this theory before.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of weird stories. I mean, the one story is when Mount St. Helens in Washington State exploded.
That was a big one.
Yeah, in 1980. And Mount St. Helens, for... literally decades, there were reports of Bigfoot seen on Mount St. Helens. And there are a lot of sort of conspiracy-based stories of the military going out and recovering the bodies of burned and killed Bigfoots, and some injured and some okay, and reportedly airlifting them out the area to military bases. The kind of story is not unlike, you know, the tales of a crashed UFO and the military
right.
comes along and collects the bodies and so on, like that. But, you know, there are a lot of stories like that. Now, Stan had a number of witnesses who were approached by the military and reportedly were shown pictures of Bigfoot and asked if they could identify what they saw, if it sort of paralleled the Air Force's pictures. The only reason I can really think of as to why somebody in the military might want to hide the truth of Bigfoot would be if it's because they're trying to understand the powers or the technology that these creatures have.
Right.
Now, if they can sort of make themselves invisible, or if they can, you know, leap through dimensions, those would all arguably be great weapons and tools for the military. You know, if you have this sort of paranormal tool that allows you to, you know, sort of cloak your appearance so you are effectively invisible, that would be something that the military would want to try and understand and replicate. So I don't think anything's being hidden on Bigfoot because they just don't want to tell us that there's a large colony of apes living in America.
It has to be,
I think, something that relates to how the abilities of these creatures are of interest for weaponizing, basically, their abilities.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, man. It makes perfect sense where it would be like, if they find the Bigfoot and the Bigfoot can do crazy shit, they're not going to be like, hey, we found an animal that can disappear at will. And, you know, they're going to be like, hey, how can we figure this out?
Yeah, exactly. So, whether or not that's actually going on, you know, that's a very different thing. But, I mean, the closest I've come to this is sort of, you know, reading these stories like Stan's, where somebody in the official world has an interest in Bigfoot, but I haven't, you know, heard any sort of off-the-record stories that definitively suggest that it's because we're trying to weaponize the technology or the powers. But if it did come out that, you know, the Bigfoot, there is a conspiracy, I'd be very surprised if it wasn't, you know, for the science-technology angle.
Yeah. Well, if someone now comes forward and tells you that, you got to write a book and dedicate that one to me and call it Weaponizing Bigfoot, which is a great title.
That would be a bad one, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good title for a book, Weaponizing Bigfoot. Well, it kind of harkens back. I know you don't do ghosts, so we're not going to get into that, but it's like it harkens back to something that sort of like came up in conversation a long, long time ago with Rosemary Ellen Guiley on the show. And it's like, we spent all this time talking about UFO disclosure and shit. And what does the government know? And here we are talking about what is the Bigfoot? You know, what do they know about the Bigfoot? And it's like, I think this is a crazy kind of conspiracy theory, but it makes perfect sense in a way. I think the government probably knows, or some element of the government probably knows what happens when you die. And they can't, and they're not going to tell anyone. That's what would fucking blow up civilization. So they don't tell you that. But I would assume if they do all the, if they have all these like clandestine projects, they'd have to have figured that out at some point. So to me, I think this maybe that's my sort of like conspiracy theory of sorts.
Well, there have been some files that have been released through the Freedom of Information Act about where research was done into the issue of out-of-body experiences and how it sort of tied in with the concept of the human soul and things like that. And, you know, that sort of may just be the tip of the iceberg. And I think, you know, anything that kind of deals with religion is always, an area that's filled with controversy. I mean, that's why the world's in turmoil, because you have opposing religions, you know, all over the place battling with each other for just for belief systems is what a lot of it comes down to, really, at the end of the day. And, I mean, if we're all honest with ourselves, nobody really knows what happens when you die, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, as I said, I'm not that interested in, like, ghost stories and haunted house stories, but I have had, a few weird experiences. And, you know, I think everybody, if you've had, like, a close friend or family member has died, numerous people, maybe even the majority of the people, will tell you that something weird kind of happened after the death, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely, like, yeah,
like,
it happened to me.
Like a strange synchronicity, or, you know, 3 weeks later there was a sudden smell in the house of, you know, the man's wife's died, and suddenly, you know, there's like the overwhelming smell of her perfume or something. You know, that kind of thing happens a lot, and it's almost as if something kind of stays around for a little while and then goes on. I actually had that happen with one of my dogs, Charity. She died back in 2003. She was a Shar Pei, you know, the big wrinkly dogs.
Right.
And she died suddenly. She had a condition called familial Shar Pei fever, which it's caused, unfortunately, by too much inbreeding of that particular type of dog. And, you know, it was a horrible, terrible, tragic time. You know, we all love our pets. But there were a couple of really weird things that happened right after she died. One was like an overpowering odor of wet dog in the duplex I was living in at the time, which literally just came out of nowhere. And that this in that same week, there were a couple of weird synchronicities happened as well. And I honestly do think that something does survive bodily death, you know, whether you call it the soul or the life force or essence. And maybe, you know, because people talk about pets coming back, maybe it's not just us, maybe every living thing that has ever lived has some sort of life force, you know.
Yeah.
But where I kind of draw the line is that, you know, when people talk about pearly gates and, you know, harps and, you know, sitting on clouds and all that business, that I find hard to take, in the same way I find hard to take the idea of this red-coloured guy with a forked tail, you know, and a pitchfork and horns and pushing people into some fiery pit. In the same way, you know, that somebody might argue against reincarnation. So, if we're all honest with ourselves, none of us really know what happens when we die. But I do think there's enough data, particularly surrounding when people die and weird stuff happens, to suggest that something survives the physical death. Now, whether it's completely our character as it is now, or it's some aspect of our character, maybe that explains why when they come back, it's done in such obscure ways, because they can't contact us, you know, say, hey, Tim, how's it going? You know, because that part of us doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, it's an interesting area. I forgot now why we got onto it, but anyway.
Oh yeah, the government like knowing and keeping it secret.
Oh yeah.
Like the government,
yeah,
the government would never tell anyone if they fucking knew, you know, that. You know,
well,
anything.
I mean, on that angle, one of the things that's interesting is that one of the people who sort of made a tie-in between, like, alien abductions and life after death and covered this quite extensively was Whitley Strieber.
Oh, yeah?
Particularly in Communion and Transformation. And, you know, he's a lot of interesting but also disturbing stuff in there. And I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean disturbing because it just is disturbing information.
Right,
about
right.
The idea of the Greys being able to manipulate human souls and
switch them around,
bizarre stuff. And in his first couple of books, Whitley spoke quite extensively about how it was pretty clear somebody was watching him. You know, it sounded more like, not like one of the known ABC agencies, but more like a deeply buried clandestine group that was watching the abductees. And that, you know, that would sort of push things down, you know, the path you're talking about, the idea of a group clandestinely looking into the issues of life after death and maybe tying it in with the UFO subjects and the Greys. And, you know, that would obviously have a big impact on, you know, if we, whatever the truth is, if somebody has proof of what the truth of life after death is, you know, some people are either going to be very pleased and some are going to be totally pissed because it's not. There's going to be one answer. So, in other words, all of these different belief systems that are in place now, most of them are going to be proved to be wrong. One of them is going to be proved to be right. And,
right.
The way the world is now, no religion is probably going to accept that it is wrong. They're going to say their version of events is right, and
the rest are
all wrong. So it's just, in that sense, it's probably far better from the perspective to say, if we put this out, there's going to be chaos, so let's just bury it.
Yeah. Well, nobody fucking believes anything anymore, man. I want to ask you about the Collins elite, but to the point I just blurted out there, it's like, I don't want to get into politics because I'm so tired of this shit, and it's like I deal with that all the time. But I guess the question I've posed to some of the guests I've had on recent weeks is, I guess just from a meta standpoint, just from a pull the camera back kind of point of view, it's like, what do you make of just like this, how America, and I guess by extension the world, has become like everyone's a fucking conspiracy theorist now. Like, it's not, conspiracy theory is so mainstream that it's not even funny. It's like there's just people who believe different versions of events that make up our current world, to the point that Alex Jones is like a household name, which is unbelievable. I mean, you're from Texas. Like, I'm sure you kind of followed at least this guy used to be just like a cable access dude that, you know, when you and I were doing our first interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's like he's on NBC on Sunday. He's, you know, President Obama ripped on him in a speech. It's like this guy is so far and above beyond anyone in the paranormal could possibly hope to fucking be. Should tell you exactly sort of, you know, at the end of the year we do these things on the show where it's like, here's what's hot, here's what's not. It's like, dude, fuck all that. Conspiracy theory has blown everything else out of the fucking water. It is, you know, taking hold of the psyche of the planet. I guess so. What do you have an opinion on that at all?
Well, I mean, the first thing I would say is you're right. You know that the conspiracies are everywhere, and I think the reason is because number one, you know, there's the increase in surveillance. You know, of the population all across the planet. Kind of creates this image, a correct image, you know, that we're being watched with, you know, iPhones, you know, Facebook, Twitter, emails, you know, are being constantly monitored, etc., etc. So then people think, well, who's doing it? Why is it being done? What have I done? So, you know, it's almost inevitable that kind of mindset starts to develop. And then, of course, when you've got, you know, everything like fake news, alternative news, you know, then, of course, you have totally conflicting statements or scenarios for one thing. And so people are like, well, both views can't be correct. Exactly. And so then, then they take the view, well, who's telling the truth and who isn't? And so inevitably, because of the nature of politics now, and you know how things like excuse me, you know, sort of fake news, alternative facts have become commonplace terms. It's like everybody is exposed to this kind of mindset when, if you look back 30 years ago, people who looked into conspiracies, it was just a handful of people who were either looking into like the Kennedy assassination or Watergate, who shot Martin Luther King, and that was about it.
Yeah.
But today, you know, everything is, you know, 9/11's a conspiracy, you know, the Manchester attack was a conspiracy, everything's a conspiracy,
yeah.
You know, and if it isn't, well, that's because we haven't found the conspiracy. So that's the problem. It's just very often, it's just the way the world is changing. It's not so much, I think, conspiracy theories are just popping up left, right, and center. It's because the nature of which the world and the media are changing, and the conflicting information that surfaces, it inevitably pushes us down that path, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like they fragment, you know, not they, but the media got fragmented. And it's like a big problem, I think, is the social media in a lot of ways, because it's like you can filter what you learn. You know, I think a lot of people are too lazy to, like, not do that. I mean, I try not to do it as much as possible, but it's like, I think a lot of people they block everybody they don't want to hear about and all that shit, and they only stay on that, you know, because I'm a news hound, I'm looking at all this stuff anyway, so it's not, I'm exposed to different points of view, but it's like, they decide on their track, and they're going to go down it, and it's like, we're dealing with a lot of people with closed minds, because they've tailored the world to what they want to believe. It's very creepy.
Well, I think one of the problems with, and this goes to worldwide news, is that today the news is less about reporting the news, and it's more about this channel or that channel putting their own spin on it. You know, why is it that we, you know, can't just report on the news, you know, investigative journalism, and report on what we've found? But, you know, you go to one news channel and another news channel, they're both reporting on it, but they've got
different
their own
things.
Spins,
yeah,
which provide the listener or the viewer with a totally different scenario and outlook. And that's because, but they've reported on exactly the same thing. So, you know, it's unfortunate from the world we live in now that, you know, that there is this spin by the channels to, you know, to promote their particular politician or against their particular politician, when in actual fact the news outlet should be there to report the news, not to tell us their version of what they want to be the truth, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's
kind of like V for Vendetta almost, you know what I mean?
Come I've never life. Seen the movie. No,
oh, have you not? Well, it's basically like we're set in England in 20 years from now when, you know, the government's state-controlled and the media is totally controlled, and it's just basically telling people, you know, what to believe. And
right.
And people just, they're sort of plunged into, you know, like Russia circa 1955 or something. So
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what we need to avoid.
Yeah. I could rant and rave about that shit all night. So we're going to move to a different topic before I piss somebody off. And that's because somebody in the chat asked, and I wanted to know. I hate to put you on the spot in a sense, because I know this is not like your bag. And I've said this to other people in the chat room too, it for other guests, where it's like they ask him about this thing, and it's like it's kind of an obscure thing that only you and I know about. So why would Nick know about it? But this is and nobody in the chat room asked me that, but they asked me to ask you about the Collins Elite. And what I wanted to ask you about it, and it's in a long, drawn-out way of asking, I'm not the best person to even be asking this question, so it's the perfect question for me to ask. But have you been following this Tom DeLonge thing at all? Because from my understanding, which is limited, it's that there seems to be something that kind of mirrors Final Events in a sense somewhere in there. That his story seems to be along the lines of what the Final Event story is. That's my understanding, but again, it's very rudimentary. Maybe you've heard about all this.
Yeah, well, I actually met Tom DeLonge actually about 8-9 years ago, and he was attending a Jim Mars lecture. I don't know if you remember this, but throughout most of the 2000s, Ryan Wood used to have a crashed UFO retrieval conference
in Vegas.
Vegas.
Yeah, I saw you at the second one.
That's right. And Tom DeLonge actually came along to the, he's either like the 2007, 8, 9 one, anyway. And, you know, because as you know, I love punk music, so I knew who he was immediately, you know.
Yeah.
And so we had a chat about music and stuff like that, and he said, you know, he was interested. He'd specifically come along for Jim's lecture all about the Kennedy assassination. So I knew when this story surfaced, it wasn't a surprise, you know, that he was. It wasn't like he was suddenly in this, you know. He'd had a long-standing interest, but as far as his stories, well, to give people sort of a bit of background first on. When you mentioned the Collins Elite and Final Events.
Yeah, yeah.
Final
I know,
events.
that was probably one of the worst worded questions. I kind of just rambled there for a while, but I think you got all the points I was trying
yeah.
to.
Yeah, but Final Events was a book that came out for me in 2010, and it dealt with a group deeply buried in the, in the intelligence community / military, called the Collins Elite, and it was like a think tank type group, and it may still exist, which essentially was looking at the UFO subject from the perspective of being not extraterrestrial or multidimensional, or at least not as we see multidimensional, but as literally demonic. You know, they viewed it as like a demonic deception that they came to conclude, like, today's modern UFO wave and sightings of goblins 500 years ago and, you know, fairies and things like that. Any kind of magical, supernatural being that has interacted with people, they believe are demonic. And they believe that the UFO issue of today is just the latest incarnation of trying to deceive us and move us away from, as they saw it, move us away from Christianity towards, like, a non-religious world. And the Collins Elite, I should stress, you know, these aren't my beliefs. These are the beliefs of the Collins Elite.
Right.
But they came to conclude that some sort of, like, final confrontation between good and evil is looming on the horizon, and that, you know, all the way in which the world's sort of gone to, you know, hell in the last, no pun intended, in the last sort of few years, you know, where it's like, I mean, a couple of months ago, you know, when all the North Korea was flexing its muscles again, every day you would hear the words like World War III, you know,
right,
what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All the time. And the Collins Elite believe that that isn't like coincidence. They think that, you know, things like North Korea, you know, ecological disasters, plane crashes, viruses, terrorist outbreaks. They believe this is a manifestation of evil on our world. And they also believe that part of that manifestation is the ruse that abductions and close encounters are extraterrestrial, when they believe, like I said, it's demonic and it's designed to try and pull us over to the dark side, if you like. And, you know, it's, in that sense, you know, it does kind of tie in with what some of the things he's talking about with, you know, some kind of big disclosure, you know. And I kind of got an impression that the disclosure wasn't going to be just, we've got, you know, 15 dead aliens and a bunch of trashed up wreckage or whatever.
Right.
I kind of got the feeling from some of the words that were said and the statements, which I can't remember word by word now, but I did get a feeling that they were talking about something that was more powerful on a almost like a spiritual level, you know.
Yeah. You there, Nick?
That was basically it. That was why I went quiet. I think that's, you know, I got the view that he was kind of gearing up, or this group of people on the inside were gearing up to a revelation, no pun intended.
Okay.
That would be, well, not just, you know, the idea that aliens are coming, and I think that was, you know, the reason why, you know, it's kind of been seen a little bit different to the average disclosure story.
This is the DeLonge thing.
Yes.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure if we were, because at some point you sort
of
like segued from
the
Collins Elite to DeLonge again. That's where I was lost.
The Tom DeLonge thing, I think some of the things I read about it, it did sound more of like a more of a spiritual revelation, at least in part.
Right, yeah. That's what I'm wondering about. It's very interesting, because it's like...
He may have spoken to some of the same people.
That's what I was just... took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I...
That's
exactly what I was going to say.
Because they did approach several people. I mean, the only reason I was able to write Final Events was because I contacted a guy named Ray Beauchesne, who used to be a MUFON state director in Nebraska. And he was approached by the group back in the early 1990s, actually 1991. Mm. And there are good signs, you know, that they were going back decades before that. So they have spoken to different people over the years. And I think sometimes it's been done to sort of test the waters, you know, should we reveal what we believe is going on? Well, let's try and, you know, let's speak to a few UFO researchers, let's encourage them to write a few books, and we'll watch what the UFO scene says about it. Mm. And watching the UFO scene, if you think about it, would actually give the government sort of a good image of how the rest of the population would respond. You know, if you can...
I mean, the UFO field is full of lunatics.
Well, if you've got like 3,000 or 4,000 people in ufology who are being watched... And, you know, they range from, you know, somebody works at a gas station, someone's a, you know, a scientist, somebody else is a school bus driver, whatever, but they're all into ufology, then, yeah, you would have, like, you know, an ability to at least get some sense of how the overall population would respond. And so I think that may be why this has been done from time to time, is... Not because they are actually going to disclose, but they're still, every so often, they try and figure out what the population's view is on all these phenomena. So they subtly or less than subtly say, oh, you know, let's put a bit more of a story out, say we're going to release something, and let's just see if they've got the same mindset as they had 15 years ago or 25 years ago.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you took the words right out of my mouth. It makes me wonder, like, I the more I hear about this DeLonge thing, I do think that it's probably somehow connected to what you were told. And it's like a part, I think I think a lot of, it would be interesting... I don't know how you do this, because, like, I don't know how this sort of thing works, but it's like, it would be interesting if you and him could get together and talk. You might know some of the same people, might be able to sort of figure out, because, you know, like you said, if they were market testing it through UFO folks, it's like, clearly they've taken another step here with the rock star. Like, if this guy's going to come out with a Collins Elite story, then way more, no offense, but, like, way more people are going to hear it now than anyone else could have.
No, you're right.
You know, yeah, it's, I mean, like, he's already getting covered just for saying he's looking at UFOs.
Well, that could be. I mean, it's always difficult to know what's going on behind the scenes, you know, when it comes to secrecy and UFOs, because there are so many different angles and supposedly groups looking into this within government agencies from different perspectives that, you know, a lot of it, I think, does come down to belief systems. I mean, the Collins Elite, like I said, they were full on and probably still are that this is demonic. But then you have, you know, back in the 40s, you have like Project Sign and Grudge. In the early days, they were full on for the extraterrestrial angle. And the CIA's Robertson panel looked more at the psychological aspects of ufology and how they could be manipulated. So what this shows is that I think maybe the government actually doesn't really have a clue which is the correct answer, but they're not above putting some of these theories out into the public domain to see what the public think about those theories, you know.
Right. Well, this just popped into my head talking to you now, and it's like the idea that the government, they're not averse, going by the idea of what Nick's new book there about Roswell says, you know, the government's not averse to, like, floating a flying saucer story to explain, to manipulate the public, essentially, to explain away, hide something. Then there's no telling that they couldn't be like, as crazy as this sounds, anything's possible, folks. It's not saying they couldn't just be like, hey, China has a crashed UFO and we need to, like, go to war with them or something. You know what I mean? It's like they could use disclosure to manipulate people in a way. They might try and weaponize disclosure, I guess is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And the Collins Elite especially, because it's like we're teetering on sort of a weird holy war right now, these religions and stuff. if the Collins Elite came out and were like, listen, the aliens, they're Jesus and they're working with them, or God knows, or the aliens are demons or whatever, and use the religious angle and fashion it around disclosure, you could really sway a lot of people.
Well, one of the most disturbing aspects of the whole Collins Elite story is that they concluded that the best way to keep these, you know, demons masquerading as aliens away is to put up like a strong barrier, but born out of old style Christianity. They believed that the only way to save people was to create almost like a society, like an iron fisted religion driven society.
Oh God. Like Handmaiden's Tale.
Yeah, and the reason they felt that was because the stronger and more powerful the belief, they felt the easier it was to keep these things at bay. And they felt that the only way to do that was to instill, you know, like literally like iron-fisted Old Testament blood and thunder.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Fear of God kind of scenario, but
Jesus.
Amp it up to the ultimate degree.
Yeah.
And they felt that that would essentially put a brick wall up and bring all this to a close. But but of course, there's other people in the group who were of a more lenient mind felt that, is it really worth placing the population into sort of almost like you know, a state-controlled, iron-fisted nation just to allow us to survive when life really would be pretty grim, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, that's the weird...
Yeah, so even within the group, there was, you know, and again, as I stressed, these aren't my views, they are the group's views, but even within the group, there was no sort of single scenario or idea that they all agreed on. They, within themselves, they disagreed quite a lot as to how this should be approached and whether the public should be told and or should be kept in the dark and just wait till your turn comes, you know. And
Right, yeah.
You know, you pop your clogs, as you say, and then we find out what happens.
yeah, it's crazy, yeah. Well, it's funny in a sense. It's like you look at these aliens, you're like, oh, why do they all look the same? You know, they have like this hive mind and shit. And it's like, well, that's one way that you could evolve into the hive mind alien species if you're under some weird, like, puritanical society, in a sense. It's fascinating in a way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this sort of goes way beyond just whether or not UFOs are real. You know, it impacts massively on us as a civilization and nations and cultures and... you know, so, but the thing is, in today's world with social media, it's so easy and worryingly easy to manipulate people because everybody gets the news immediately. You know what I mean? And
right.
And you're told it's this or it's that. And you know, I mean, you think about it. Terms like alternative facts, that would not probably have spread outside of the U.S. if it was back, say, in the 1970s or 80s, or even the early to mid-90s, because there was no way for it to travel around the planet so quickly, you know, people using the term in jokes and sketches on shows and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's why people are so easily controlled, because the data, whether it's true or not, hits us immediately and, you know, constantly. So,
yeah, it's weird in a lot of ways. It's like this internet thing. I mean, we saw, you and I are old enough where we were like, we had lives as children where this thing didn't exist yet. You know what I mean? Which is frightening in a way, because as we get older, there's less and less of us, you know? It's kind of scary. Where they're like,
well, you know, you're right. But I mean, one of the things I would, you're right in that sense. One of the things I would say is that, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, the way in which a lot of people interact has changed. And certainly for, I guess, people who are now sort of under 20, you know, their lives are dominated by social media. I mean, you know, it's like when I was a kid, you know, I'd be sort of riding my bike around the little village I used to live in and falling off my bike and, you know, scratching your legs and arms. And I mean, you know, you do that today, well, you know, you're classed as a bad parent, and, you know.
yeah.
But
like,
before you know it, the authorities are getting involved, all because you rode your bike around town and happened to fall off. You know,
yeah.
Well, that's what kids are supposed to fall off their bikes. You
that's
know
what I
mean?
Say about those creepy clowns. At least they're getting out of the house.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it. But, you know, I mean, when people say, well, your kids can't go out at night. Well, Yes, there are some dangerous places on the planet. Everywhere there's some certain dangerous places. But there have always been dangerous places, and there have always been dangerous people. But, you know, to say that, oh, well, you know, your kids can't play outside and they've got to be watched 24/7.
Oh, God,
that's,
no.
That's like fear factor kind of situations, you know. And, you know, the idea, like I said, you know, just like they call the nanny state. You know, I don't know if they keep call it over here, but in England, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this because you might get injured, and you know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, but I guess the big downside, of course, but I'm sure people are sort of, you know, younger than us are going to say, oh well, you know, just older people, you know, preaching to us. But what I would say is that, you know, it's not the fault of kids who are young today, that perhaps they're, you know, so entangled with social media and don't socialise going out that much. It's just the world they're brought into. You know, it's no point us complaining.
No. Yeah,
whatever
it
used to be, because every generation says that, and the kids who are 20 now will say exactly the same thing when they're, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, whatever.
They'll say exactly
the same thing in relation to the technology that's around then. But the only thing I would say is that, yes, the internet is a great tool, and we could not live without it, and we shouldn't, but I think it has led to isolation, and it's led to an erosion of how we socially, or how a lot of people interact socially. I mean, it doesn't bother make much difference to my life, you know, Friday and Saturday night. You know, Friday might be going out, you know, for a drink with a bunch of mates. Saturday could be a soccer game. Sunday, you know, take a girlfriend out to see a band play. You know, I'm always doing shit. So it doesn't really impact on me. But if I look at people, friends of mine who've got kids, I don't see them doing the stuff that I did, you know, and
right.
The stuff I did was great fun, you know, racing around with all your mates at 8 o'clock at night on a Wednesday night on your bikes and playing soldiers and whatever, you know. Which
you probably get
criticised for playing soldiers because it's
yeah, absolutely. Well, it's I think that you know, it's like the fundamental thing that came along in our generation or lifetime or whatever that changed society, the world, civilization. You know, it's like to older folks, it's like the automobile and you know, maybe television. It's like our generation, this is the thing that came along in our lives that like changed civilization.
Yeah, I mean, you can only look back just a few centuries. Like you said, you know, I'm from England. I mean, you only have to go back 300 or 400 years, and people were burning people at the stake for being witches, you know.
So we have made
some progress. But if you think about it, that's not long ago that people really believed it was okay to take somebody into a little village and set fire to them, you know what I mean? And everybody be clapping because you got rid of a witch. So in other words, you know, society, civilization does change, and changes in massive ways. And I'm sure if there's a civilization, a human civilization around 400 years from now, it'll be so unrecognizable and so different that we'll just be glad that we were born when we were born, you know, because you kind of get thrust. There's this theory, you know, like future shock. If you get suddenly plunged into a future world, your mind wouldn't take it because it was so different to the one that you're comfortable in, you know. So because we did develop slowly and bit by bit, but to be plunged into a totally different world would be very different. So that's why I think, you know, for kids today, if they're happy sort of just texting, that's fine. I don't have an issue with it. I just think, you know, sort of going out to the woods with a tent, telling spooky stories, you know, and hanging out when you're 10 or 11 and doing that, it's fun, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, those creepy clowns, at least they're getting out of the house. Now, can we go? We're running up to, like, the end of the thing. Can we go, like, 15 more minutes just to clear up the time we planned originally?
Yeah.
Awesome. You're the man. Well, what do you have cooking in the... Well, actually, where can we... It's, like, 5 minutes, so where would folks who are listening on the live show, where's their hub to find out more from Nick Redfern?
Well, I have a blog, which I update most days. It's called World of Whatever, and the address is Nick Redfern 40an. F-O-R-T-E-A-N, nickredfern40an.blogspot.com. People can contact me there, or Twitter, Nick Redfern UFO, or my Facebook page. There's five or six, or maybe a few more Nick Redferns, but you'll find me on there. As far as what I've got going on, I'll actually be speaking at the annual Roswell UFO Festival that Guy Malone puts on in Roswell every July. So I'll be there this coming July. It's the, I think it's the 27th of, or the 28th of June through to about the 2nd or 3rd of July. And I'm going to be speaking about the new book, and no doubt they'll be burning me in effigy down Roswell High Street or whatever. So, and so I'll be speaking there about that, and also about the Collins Elite. I'm doing two different lectures, and I think I'm doing each one twice, so people will have a chance if they miss it the first time. And in September, I'll have a totally different book out called Shapeshifters, which deals with tales of shape-shifting creatures throughout history, mythology, folklore, paranormal. So obviously there's things like werewolves in there, but also things like skinwalkers and tales of African leopard cults.
Jesus.
And all sorts of sort of things that throughout history have been perceived as shape-shifters. So that'll be out through Llewellyn Books in September. Then in February of next year, not too far away, I guess, I've got a book coming out on the entire Slender Man controversy.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, yeah.
Yeah, well, that it was the, I mean, I can talk about it because, you know, the information is actually online at New Page Books, the publisher.
Yeah, talk about that new book.
Well, yeah, that one kind of, you know, begins with how the Slender Man story began as, you know, essentially like the ultimate bad guy of the internet, you know, like the ultimate internet meme for the paranormal. But then, you know, the interesting thing is that people began to see the Slender Man in the real world as if, you know, the idea of like thought forms and tulpas, that when people believe in something and the belief's so powerful, it can actually sort of create something like a supernatural equivalent of the thing that's actually born out of the imagination. That's the concept of a thought form. You concentrate on something so deeply and think about it, and so many people, millions or hundreds of thousands around the world, are doing the same. And what you get is a sudden spontaneous creation of a real version of what actually was just you know, something from somebody's imagination. So it looks at how and why the phenomenon of the Slender Man developed so much of a fascination, to things like, you know, the stabbing of the girl by the two girls in Wisconsin, and then how people are now seeing the creature, or whatever you want to call it, and also the various different theories that have been put forward. And that would include things like the tulpa theory, and also, you know, the idea is the internet becoming self-aware and actually creating these images ourselves, itself for us. So, you know, there's a lot of areas are covered.
That's interesting. How do you mean, like, self-aware? How would it do that?
Well, I've actually got a couple of people I interviewed for the book who actually said they saw on their laptop, like, the image of the Slender Man appear and talk to them.
All right, well, hold on. Let me just say goodnight to the live folks. Thanks for tuning in, folks, and we will be back next week, and thanks to all the folks in the chat room. You don't have your names in front of me, but thank you. So I don't know what else to say. Next week, Jason off at 9 p.m. Yeah, that's it pretty much. June 20th. Sorry, Nick.
That's all right.
There we go. I think that's fine. I don't know what else to say. So.
All right, cool.
So where were we talking? Oh. The internet creating Slender Man somehow on its own.
Well, yeah, this gets into some really weird areas which go beyond sort of thought forms, but in a very different direction. Namely, I've got a couple of...
All right, we're good. Sorry, man.
Oh.
We're just going to keep recording now.
Okay. One of the things I've got in the book is a couple of stories where people had actually seen the Slender Man on their laptop. And I don't mean, you know, surfing the internet or Googling or anything like that. I mean literally, like the figure or the image or the silhouette of the Slender Man would appear on the screen and would actually start talking to them, threatening them.
Jesus.
Yeah, which is like really spooky, you know, and so... The theory is that there's like this theory that when millions of people go on a search engine and look for something, they're actually almost like a hive mind, all focusing on this one thing. And if the internet's self-aware, it kind of gives back to what the people are looking for. So it's the internet itself, the theory is, creates this imagery, but it does so because of this mass number of minds that are all focusing deeply on the internet and all putting the thought out that they're looking for information on the Slender Man. And the other angle that I cover in the book that a lot of people don't realize is that there's actually a lot of reports of Slender Man type things, almost identical, that actually predate the creation of the Slender Man in 2009.
Oh, yeah, you know, I've heard
they
about
go
that
back
kind of thing. Yeah.
Decades, in some cases centuries. So basically it'll cover just about every aspect of the Slender Man mystery. And as I said, that'll be out February of next year.
Yeah, that's a creepy story.
Well, there's a lot of... Yeah, I mean, the guy who created it, by his own admission, you know, he had a lot of inspirations, like, for example, the Men in Black, the Madgasser of Mattoon, the Shadow People, some of the creatures conjured up, created by H.P. Lovecraft, you know. So there was a lot of different archetypes, if you like, that went into the imagery of what the, you know, the Slender Man is.
Yeah, a lot of creepy elements. Yeah, it's weird. It's like we've created our own generation. Again, it's like this is our generation's thing. In 100 years from now, they'll be like, the folks who lived at the turn of the century, you know, they brought upon the internet. And also, you know, one common myth from that time was the Slender Man. It's like, and we're, you know, we're going to be like, how do they believe that shit? What are they, crazy?
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because it's not just one story. You know, it's sort of sprung off into so many different angles and theories and experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Ideas and concepts and what the nature of reality really is. You know, and things like that. So.
I mean, I joked about it earlier. Would you do a book on the clown thing? Because I feel like this thing it's still unfolding, but I feel like you'd be a great person to write the definitive clown book.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if I'm doing one on one creepy creature like Slender Man, I could do another one to follow it up, you know.
Yeah, because this clown thing.
I did actually think about doing one once. Do you know the story of the Madgasser of Mattoon?
I've heard about it, yeah, but I tell the folks about it because it's an awesome fucking story.
I wouldn't mind doing a book on that, actually, like spend a month or so out there and just get as much information. Because, again, it's like this creepy guy in a black suit who would sort of turn up at people's homes in this little town of Mattoon and in Illinois, and they would describe how the house would be filled with this odor of like brimstone, you know, sulfur, and they would feel paralyzed, and there would be this sweet odor would come over them, and this like guy in a black suit, like in a proto Man in Black, would loom over them in the bedroom or whatever, and even the FBI got involved in that. It was like a really weird story. So yeah, I guess I could do, like, you know, the Slender Man, the Madgasser Mattoon, you know, the creepy clown.
What is this Grinning Man you wrote about recently? Because that thing is creepy as hell too.
Well, actually, the Grinning Man is kind of like a man in black. He's usually described as like a more like the Shadow People, like a silhouetted man in black. You know, he's got like the black suit and black fedora. But he's sometimes described like a silhouette, like one-dimensional. But he has like this insane grin on his face. You know, most of the men in black kind of look grim, not grin. You know, the grin. G-R-I-M. But there are a number of cases where they do have these eerie smiles, you know, like a serial killer smile, that sort of thing. But they do sort of veer more towards the Shadow People than the Men in Black. But there's clearly a crossover. So, you know, the Grinning Man is like another example of all these weird characters that you've got, like the Shadow People, the Hat Man, the Men in Black, the Black Eyed Children.
I was going to ask you about the Black Eyed Children.
Yeah,
what do you think of that thing? That is really, because I mean, you've looked extensively at the Men in Black phenomenon, but it's like this is so, like, fucking weird. Like, this was,
well,
I mean, I interviewed you over a decade ago. There's no way that anyone, that this came upon us over the last 10 years, where it's like, where did this come from? What is this?
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised if at least today a substantial number of black-eyed kid reports could actually be like thought forms and tulpas, because there's no doubt that it hasn't taken off to the extent and level that the Slender Man phenomenon has. There's no doubt it hasn't reached that. But it has, at one point, I mean, that was the talked about thing, you know, for a while. You know, the Slender Man's just gone on and on and on. But, I mean, there's no doubt that the black-eyed kids, that was talked about extensively for a long time. And so,
it's,
you know,
still
maybe,
enormously popular.
Well, it is, but it just hasn't reached sort of Slender Man proportions yet.
So, if anything, it's on the rise, yeah.
Yeah, but what I would say is that, yes, some of them could be tulpas. There could be others that were sort of, you know, people have started to write fictional stories about it, which they have. You can find a lot of fiction novels on Amazon about the black-eyed kids. And so maybe that has kind of helped to engineer a second wave of black-eyed children, which are now in our real world, but were born out of our imagination, stepping out of our minds. But again, you know, they're very similar to the Men in Black. They try and find a way to be invited into the home. You know, and the Men in Black wear black suits and black hats. The black-eyed kids wear black hoodies. So there's also the colours the same for the clothing.
Yeah.
And there's a hat or a head covering component in both. And the issue of trying to get invited into the house, et cetera, et cetera. You put all these together and all of those things, like I said, black-eyed kids, women in black, men in black, hat man, shadow people, grinning man, Madgashra Matoon, Springheel Jack, all of these are kind of somehow, you know, interlinked.
Yes, exactly. It's fascinating to think about. I don't think I've ever painted it with that broad a brush before, but it makes perfect sense, and it's weird. I don't know what else to say. It's like, I wonder if it's some archetype in our own psyche of, like, intrusion or something, you know,
well,
that
some
people conjure
think,
up.
Yeah, some people think that's why the Men in Black and the Slender Man wear black suits, because it sort of reflects our fear of authority, you know, like guys in black suits turning up on your doorstep and flashing an ID card. You know, it's kind of, some people see it as like an analogy to that. It's like our subconscious creating a paranormal equivalent of, you know, the government agent kind of thing.
Now, you wrote the book Women in Black, which I think is just kind of funny in a way, because it feels like, you know, those ghost hunting shows where it's like, now there's black ghost hunters, now there's gay ghost hunters, now there's, you know, different demographics. It was like, oh, Women in Black, it's good that they're branching out. Men in Black are branching out to Women in Black. I like that. So who are these Women in Black? I've never heard any of these stories before.
Well, yeah, there's actually a lot of stories of Women in Black, and they're just like the Men in Black. You know, they dress in black like a woman's business suit. They look very pale. They knock on people's doors and try and find, you know, get away into the house. And they typically turn up when people have had UFO encounters. John Keel actually wrote quite extensively about this issue. And one famous series of events that he talked about was that this was at the height of his Mothman research in Point Pleasant. He started to get phone calls from people in Point Pleasant saying they were getting visits from this eerie woman in black who said she was Keel's secretary and demanding information on all what they told him.
Jesus.
And they phoned John up and said, well, you know, we've already told you. Why do we need to tell this sort of creepy secretary of yours? And he's like, well, I don't have a secretary, you know.
That's a crazy story.
Yeah, and I've got a lot like that in the book where, you know, they turn up claiming to be like census takers or, you know, they're doing a survey of the area, that kind of thing. And but then they start getting round to, have you had any strange dreams? And then things like...
and you're like, I thought you were here to read the gas meter.
Yeah, and then the witnesses realize that they're actually, you know, there for an entirely different reason than they claimed, you know, in the beginning. So, but again, they don't look like normal people. They look sort of gaunt and, you know, zombie-like almost. And a lot of paranormal overtones with the Women in Black, you know, as if they are kind of, you know, something supernatural rather than human or even extraterrestrial. There's a number of reports in the book where people had been visited by the women in black after they'd been dabbling with Ouija boards, as if they'd sort of opened a doorway, you know, that kind of let something through.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's actually the book, although it's, you know, I point out that it is sort of like a study of the parallels to the Men in Black, you know, it's the female equivalent. But it does read far more like, rather than Independence Day meets the Men in Black, it's far more like H.P. Lovecraft meets, you know, Dracula or vampires. You know, it's kind of like dark, menacing, pale creatures coming out at night and threatening people and causing havoc in their lives, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, I think maybe I've often, well, not often, but in the past I've said on the show, it's like maybe I talked to Eric Wallet. I don't know if you know about his book. He's kind of like very Jacques Vallée-esque, where he thinks that like a lot of this stuff is a lot of UFO sightings are like conjured by the mind, essentially, during a state of great transition in society, essentially, the big flaps and waves. Mm-hmm. And I extrapolated from there in the past that maybe then a personal UFO sighting for someone, and it's been borne out in some things I've seen and read, you know, like a personal UFO sighting for somebody happens when they're in this state of great turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
So one wonders then if these entity experiences, for lack of a better term, happen also when people are in those states. You know what I mean? It'd be interesting to find that out.
I mean, that also kind of ties in, I guess, with things like religious conversion, you know what I mean? When somebody goes down a very deeply religious path, well, you know, you could make a good case that in many respects, some religions do parallel ufology. You know, people in ufology encounter a higher being and they transform and change their lifestyle or whatever. So
yeah. Have you ever been to those? I talked about this with Marie. I went out to LA in April, and I went to the I went to Unarius in San Diego, and also the Aetherius Society in LA. Have you ever been out to those like places?
Oh yeah, me and Greg went to Aetherius Society about probably 7 or 8 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's quite the trip.
Yeah.
We had
a good afternoon. We went there, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and there was nobody there, and the guy gave us a full tour, and we probably hung out with him about an hour. I think he was happy that somebody turned up.
That's exactly what happened to us.
Well, maybe that's how it always is there. Then.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon, too. Weird. Yeah.
Actually, we've just been to, I don't know if you know it, Devil Gate Dam in Pasadena.
Yeah, we went there. Greg gave us the whole tour of L.A., essentially.
Oh, nice.
For Paramania, so we saw all the different weird things.
Good.
Yeah, Devil's Dam is cool as hell. All right, so where can folks find the books again? I'll tell this joke, in a sense. I was looking through your recent books on Amazon, and because of the way they, like, have, like, these weird mistakes in their database and shit, one of the books, I have to find it, is written by both Nicholas Redfern and Nick Redfern.
But I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, I was like, that must be like the best book he's written, dude. He double wrote it.
They're doppelganger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So where Nick Redfern 40 in Blogspot? What's the thing again?
Yeah, it's Nick Redfern 40 and Fortan. NickRedfern40.blogspot.com. That's my website, and the title's World of Whatever. So just Google each, and also. People can reach me at Twitter, Nick Redfern UFO, or you can find me on Facebook as well. And all my books are available on Amazon, and about half of them you can get off the shelves in Barnes & Noble as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick's all over Barnes & Noble, folks. So, and I wrote them down here, Shapeshifters, Morphin Monsters, and Changing Cryptids. That's coming out in September 2017. The New World Order book is October 2017, and the Slender Man Mysteries is February 2018. He's already that far ahead, and I think you can pre-order at least the first two, and you may be able to even pre-order the Slender Man one. So, folks,
yeah, you actually can. You can already pre-order it.
Yeah. So just order it. Here's a good tip, folks. Order it now, and then in February of 2018, you go to the mailbox and you're like, oh, nice, I got that Nick Redfern book. It just came out. It's in my mailbox because I ordered it back in June because I listened to the show on Banal of America. So do that, and you get a little surprise next February. All right, Nick, I can't thank you enough, man. I really do appreciate you coming on the show and enduring all these problems and shit. But we, in a way, it turned out better than I even could have hoped because we just jammed and covered a whole bunch of stuff. It was awesome.
I actually like doing a show like that because, you know, if it's a show where, you know, it's just 20 questions, which is all planned and pre-ordered and whatever, you know, I just... It don't make for good radio, I don't think. It's too kind of sterile, you know what I mean? And I think if you can just, you know, you don't really know where the conversation's going, but it goes along fine, you know. I think that's a good way to do it. And you cover a lot of ground and, you know, you can sort of chat about it openly. And,
oh, we had a lot of laughs and a lot of F-bombs.
Just go where it all goes, you know what I mean? It's
exactly.
Much better than just like a formal sit-down, you know, on some news show or whatever.
Exactly. Well, thanks. I appreciate it, man. And like I said, this is our last season, and I wish I'd had you on more, but every interview was fucking awesome with you, man, so I really appreciate it. And we'll be talking again in the future. Don't worry about that.
All right.
But I've really enjoyed all our adventures over the years, and hopefully we can reconnect in the offline world someday soon.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
All right, brother. Thank you very much.
All right.
You can hang up.
Cheers, Tim.
Sometimes folks stay on by accident. So, so you're more than welcome to go and watch whatever you want to watch and chill out.
All right.
Have a good night, brother.
All right. Cheers, Tim. See you later.
Good night. All right. There you go, folks. That was Nick Redfern. Awesome conversation. A lot like last week's show with Thorne Coleman. Just a pure jazz at this point. It's not even a jam session anymore. It's just jazz. We just cover everything and everything. What does that even mean? Anything and everything. And bounce around from whatever topic comes up as the conversation progresses. Big thanks to the folks in the chat room. They added some interesting fuel for thought. I really appreciate that. And thanks to all the folks who tuned in live. They're long gone now, of course, but hopefully they'll come back next week on the program when we bring you Jason Offit, longtime friend of the program, BOA Audio's official drinking buddy. I'll give him that title. Jason Offit, BOA Audio's official drinking buddy. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. And we'll bestow it on him next week on the program at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. 3 weeks in a row at 9 p.m. This is crazy. But All of America Audio, June 20th at 9 p.m. Jason Offit. And I forgot, we're going to talk about the different monsters of America. Different creatures and weird legends and creepy things you can find in all the different states around America. So it's going to be a tour of America and the weird monsters on Banal America with Jason Offit, our good buddy, and the official drinking buddy of BOA Audio. So that's next week. And what else we got? Nothing, pretty much. So on that note, let me get the thing. Thank you for listening, folks, and I will talk to you next week on Banal of America.